Georgia has been synonymous with the peach for more than 100 years, but is this peach a Southern success because it's so delicious? Fuzz actually has more to do with it than you might think, says at least one Georgia professor, Thomas Oakey. He teaches history at Kennesaw State University, and he's written about the significance of peach skin and all that fine fuzz that comes with it. It's in his forthcoming book, The Georgia Peach: Culture, Agriculture, and Environment in the American South. And he joins me now. Hi, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Dan Horton. He's Professor Emeritus of Entomology at the University of Georgia. So, Dan, you're going to tell us all about insects, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And Al Pearson is a fourth-generation peach farmer and co-owner of Pearson Farms. Al, it's good to have you as well.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
How many peaches, Al, do you farm and harvest every year?
We have about 1,500 acres of peaches that occupy us.
Do you have any idea what the number of peaches that translates to?
That would be about 500,000 times 60 years.
That's a lot.
30 million, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a lot of peaches, I'll say that. Okay, but let me go to you first, Tom, because this is your theory of kind of going with peach fuzz to talk about the importance of why the peach is so important to Georgia. So give me the elevator pitch. What's your theory here?
It's really just a way of thinking about one reason why the Georgia peach was successful. You had in the 19th century all these horticulturists who wanted to grow all kinds of fruits, gooseberries and citrus and pears and plums and grapes. And peaches were the one thing that kind of stuck. And I think part of the reason for that is the fuzz that does provide a little bit of resistance to the pests. Now, I'm no scientist. Dan Horton can talk.
That's why we've got Dan
with more
here.
Authority on how insects like the fuzz, but I think it's an interesting way of thinking about the peach's environmental adaptation to the South.
And peaches are not originally native to Georgia. All of these things were brought in here to experiment.
That's right. Well, peaches actually came over with Jesuit friars in the 16th century, so they've been here for quite a long time. They're practically native. They're from China originally.
Okay, so when you talk about the peach fuzz making a difference, why do you say that? Why? I mean, the difference between we've been saying it over and over, the difference between a peach and a nectarine is just that fuzz. So what was it about the fuzz that made that particularly attractive to Georgians?
Well, this is an environment with a lot of pests. It's humid. We don't have really harsh winters, so we have a lot of pests. I think the fact that peaches succeeded in the way that nectarines never have is in part because insects and pathogens can't get a grip on the peach in quite the same way that they can on nectarines or plums, say.
Haha, that brings us to you, Dan.
All right.
So tell me about the peach fuzz. And, I mean, is there an evolutionary benefit for the peach to have that fuzz?
Well, this is going to ramble off into theory rather than hard science.
I'll try and edit you.
Please do. Peach fuzz is like many other traits present in plants that will discourage an assortment of pests. If you think of it from the scale, say, of an insect, if you were a very small caterpillar trying to bore your way into a peach and the moth lays an egg on the fruit, then the little caterpillar, which is obviously tiny, has to negotiate through a very dense thicket of pubescence. That's quite difficult.
The pubescence is what scientists call fuzz.
Fuzz, hair.
Yeah.
And so I think that's been much more thoroughly studied in some other crops, but there's no question about it. It's a physical barrier, but there's also certainly chemical defensive compounds present that make it just a little bit more difficult on an insect or perhaps a fungal spore simply because the fuzz vastly increases the surface area of the fruit.
I guess my completely unscientifically educated thought would be that it's harder to hold on to something that's smooth. But if you're that tiny, that's the opposite, right?
I think I would look at it that is very often you've got, for insects, it's something of an obstacle course, and especially when they're tiny, they infest fruit because there's lots of them, and the lucky ones survive. The other thing that I would observe, and I'm sure Al could comment on this, if you look at a single drop of dew, for instance, on a peach, it sits up there way up high, and I think it's basically nestled on top of all of the fuzz, which holds it away and allows a bit more of that moisture to evaporate.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, then let's bring you into this conversation, Al. You, your farming goes back in generations in your family. Have you always focused on peaches?
Yes, since the late 1800s, my great-grandfather came in and began to buy land and plant peaches, and we hadn't had enough sense to get out of it. So I'm still in it.
What is it that you think makes the peach successful in the South, and especially in Georgia?
Well, it's hard for me to accept that something that is as irritating as fuzz is actually a benefit. But I know it is. I think the worst job I ever had to do was clean fuzz out from under the packing shed. When the process was automated of packing, we had dry brushes that just brushed the fuzz off the peach and blew it up under the packing shed. So then some lucky soul had to crawl up under there and get it out. And I was nominated and elected.
That was
and,
you?
That's a bad job.
That sounds like a bad job. Let me put this out to our listeners. Do you prefer a peach or a nectarine? Because we wonder how you feel about the peach fuzz. Irritating, like Al says, does it gross you out? Or, does it kind of feel like a freshly shaven head, kind of cool to touch? Give us your peachy first thoughts at OST Talk on Twitter. You can just call us. Let me bring this back to you, Tom, because you use the fuzz as a jumping off point for all kinds of things, and especially to talk about the environment. One of the things you point out that I find interesting is the fact that part of the reason peaches succeeded because they worked well in tandem with a cotton crop.
That's right.
How does that work?
So the peaches emerged most successfully in the South in the Cotton Belt. And part of that's environmental, but part of that's also, it's actually kind of a social fit as well as an environmental fit. So you can't just have a new crop that fits well with the environment. You also have to have a social system that supports it. In the Cotton Belt, which was not mechanized, you have a lot of people who are working in cotton. And it just so happens that the peach harvest happens at a moment when there's a real lull in the work. And at a moment right before the cotton harvest, which remember, if you're only getting paid once a year, you're probably feeling pretty desperate, right?
Yeah.
So at a moment when you're willing to take any work. Peach growers were paying cash in a lot of cases around the turn of the century, which doesn't happen a lot in the rural South. So it was a good job. And it fit perfectly with the cotton schedule.
And I wonder, Dan, as we move on to the relationship with the wildlife, do you call insects wildlife, of Georgia, do we actually have evidence that insects are less interested or less successful at nesting inside a peach?
Well, we have studied some of the primary insect pests of peaches. For instance, plum curculio, which is a small native weevil, it's a pest. Its actual preference more than anything else is the Chickasaw plum. So it likes the native
I don't know.
Host better.
How is a Chickasaw plum different from a plum that I ate in California?
I would leave that either to Tom or perhaps Tom's dad to explain that. There's a lot of hybridization of different plum species to get to the species or to the plums
all
that you would
ins
be familiar with.
And outs
with.
Of fruit. But continue with what you're saying. I'll ask Tom in a second about the Chickasaw plum.
The Chickasaw plum is clearly this insect's favorite. It will sting or lay an egg and at least 90% of the fruit in a plum thicket before it will even wander into an adjacent unsprayed peach orchard. So there are big differences out there. However, one thing I will say about insects that have a fairly narrow host range, they do not starve.
Well,
and if we provide them with a bounty, which a monoculture is, then they will adapt and adapt very well. And there's clear evidence that there are other insects that For instance, the lesser peach tree borer, which is a pest that attacks the tree, not the fruit.
Oh, I see.
Even though its native hosts are clearly wild plums, it likes the domestic peach, Prunus persica, much better.
And I'm sure Al doesn't like it at all. But let me bring this back to you, Tom. The reason that he's referencing you is because you did not follow your father into his chosen business. You're a history professor. Your dad was a famous peach breeder, correct?
That's right. Yep.
Which may be the source of your interest in peaches.
Yeah, I grew up in the middle of peach country, but from the kind of the research scientist side of things. So my dad bred peaches. I think about half of the peaches that are grown in the South now are his varieties.
Really?
They usually have the name Prince in them, July Prince, June Prince, Fire Prince.
Al, do you use any of Tom's dad's varieties?
I sure do. We are full of them, and it's been a good bit of work that his father did, and we are appreciative of it.
And Tom, I want to let you talk a little bit more about some of the other implications you've drawn from peach crops in Georgia especially, because you talk about what growing so many peaches and harvesting so many peaches here has done to the composition, the sociological composition in terms of labor of the state. What did you find?
Well, as I was saying, that you had early on, you had this kind of labor surplus at the time when you needed it in peach production in July and August. When cotton mechanized and as African Americans left the South and left the rural South,
this
especially.
This is post-cotton gin.
Cotton gin is early 19th century. This is post-World War II. Actually, we don't really mechanize cotton in the South until after World War II. So people are still hand-picking, doing a lot of hand work. So you have this manual labor force that's there. And peaches, I think, part of the reason they got their start so strong in the cotton belt is that they had that labor force that was available. As those workers left, it became more difficult for growers. And I think, Al, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think getting a reliable labor source is probably one of the biggest challenges for growers today, and was really from, say, the 1960s until the guest worker programs of the late 90s and early 2000s.
All right, we only have a couple seconds left, but I need all of you to tell me what your recommended recipe with peaches is. Al, let me begin with you. What's the best thing to make with peaches?
Pearson peach ice cream.
Okay, Tom?
No question.
Eat them fresh.
Eat them fresh. Yeah. And Dan, do you have a preferred way?
Yes, ma'am. My Aunt Eva's peach dessert, which is basically a cobbler.
And a peach cobbler. Okay, all good suggestions. Tom Oakey is a professor of history at Kennesaw State University, author of the forthcoming book, The Georgia Peach, Culture, Agriculture, and Environment in the American South. We also heard from Al Pearson of Pearson Farms and Dan Horton, professor emeritus of entomology at UGA. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.